This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. Televangelist Pat Robertson is not happy that Donald Trump is facing mass criticism for his unprofessional and dishonest and unconstitutional policies. Robertson said recently, quote, "The Lord's plan is being put in place for America, and these people are not only revolting against Trump, they're revolting against what God's plan is for America." Robertson added, "These left-wingers and so-called progressives are trying to destroy the country that we love and take away the freedoms they love. They want collectivism. They want socialism. What we are looking at is free markets and freedom from this terrible, overarching bureaucracy." Well, Donald Trump, whose lifestyle isn't exactly terribly Christian, has embraced evangelical constituencies and their values, as stated by Robertson. "It is worth now, more than ever, to examine the origins of the movement that sees capitalism and selfishness as a religious virtue." My guest is Terry Heaton. He's the former executive producer of the 700 Club on the Christian Broadcasting Network. He worked alongside Pat Robertson, and he's the author of the new book, The Gospel of Self, How Jesus Joined the GOP. Welcome to the program, Terry.
I'm glad to be here. So very glad to be here. Thank you.
So I suppose it's fair to say that you have now left that sort of ideology that you were steeped in when you were working alongside Pat Robertson?
Right. I was there at a very important time, which when he up to and when he ran for president. And so I have some insight that is really relevant for today, because we were really the ones who began the whole concept of right-wing media. And so, you know, people have just accepted that that's a fact. And the truth is that there really is no such thing as right-wing media. And I think because it's political media. The mainstream media is not a political group, and it never has been, even though we have been branded as such by the right. So when we came along and inserted ourselves as TV journalism with a different spirit, we moved ourselves to the right and or planted ourselves to the right and said everybody else is liberal. Well, that's not true, because, you know, we were political media and the mainstream was not. So, you know, we put the mainstream in a box, and for crying out loud, now today, the mainstream is considered fake news. At least they've completely hijacked the brand and present it now as fake news, if you can actually believe that.
So the idea or this label of the liberal media was something that you say originated with the Christian Broadcasting Network and the 700 Club?
Yes. You know, we began that whole, you know, TV news with a different spirit thing. And it was very, we knew what we were doing. I mean, it was very clever and it was very smart. And it came at a time in the early 80s when people were really looking for something different, a different way of looking at things. We had just come out of the 60s and the 70s. Reagan was president. And, you know, there was a sort of Christian revival in the air, which, you know, fostered the development of the televangelists. And, you know, there's an old joke that that the devil doesn't want three people in hell, and they are Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, and Pat Robertson, because Billy Graham would get everybody saved, Oral Roberts would get everybody healed, and Pat Robertson would raise the money for air conditioning. So Pat was really a money-raising political genius. And we used, you know, Christianity, of course, to actually, you know, perform a really profound act of social engineering, and that being to move Christians in droves into the Republican Party and then slide the Republican Party to the right at the same time.
So I want to quote from what Pat Robertson said in 1981. This is from your book, where you basically said, "I tell you, In our world today, people are like a bunch of sheep. They're saying, what must we do? You know, what do we do with our money? What do we do with our children? What do we do with our education? What do we vote for? And all these, what do we do? And somehow or other, God's got to give some people with knowledge of the times to tell Israel what they ought to do. And I think we have a golden opportunity to do that. And that's one of the things we're trying to do on the 700 Club. So what did it all start out as, Terry? Clearly, Pat Robertson saw a need for people to be given some direction and to basically direct their faith into something very specific. What did he hope they directed their faith into? Was it simply a way for him to become rich? You know, people could donate to the 700 Club?
No, I think that observers such as yourself and people outside make a mistake in thinking that this is a greedy act by any particular person or group. I will tell you that everyone at that organization, at least when I worked there, were entirely sincere in their efforts. I mean, we felt that the country was going to hell, and that God, you know, through Jesus was the only answer. And so, you know, I think you have to understand that Pat is first and always was a political animal. That he happened to be a minister, a Baptist minister, didn't change that at all. In fact, it opened up a whole new avenue for him to pursue his real interests. I don't believe it was disingenuous. And although, I mean, you're free, anybody is free to argue with me on that. I think it's a mistake to think that, because that assigns a bit of a false understanding to the whole Trump phenomenon, too, because those people in middle America who follow Donald Trump, they are sincere in their beliefs, too. I mean, they're ignorant, but they're sincere. And so that it requires a different approach to try to change that focus, because for 35 years, you know, a whole generation now has been educated on the belief that there, you know, this break between liberals and conservatives, and that the mainstream media is liberal, and that the conservative press actually, you know, spouts the language of God or the language of Jesus, or at least, you know, the platform of the Republican Party is more conducive to the thinking of Christians than otherwise.
And now, how did the idea that Christianity was the natural sort of complement to capitalism than to say socialism? I mean, why, or just collectivism? When we think about religion, and spirituality, and you know what God might want, most people, if you set aside all the politics, might think God, if such an entity exists, might want all people to be happy, healthy, and prosperous. Not everyone look out for himself, but let's all look out for one another. How did that everyone look out for himself idea, that selfishness, be seen as a religious virtue? Where did that come from?
Well, I think it comes right out of a certain reading of the Bible, and that's the problem. That you know, I try to point out that even at its very core, evangelical Christianity is self-centered, because I'm trying to save my butt from hellfire, and that is a very selfish proposition. So I'm living today for a tomorrow that will be, you know, glorious. And so I must obey, I must follow these tenets, I must preach the gospel, I must, you know, do all of these things, because in the end, I win. And, you know, I think that's, you know, there's a sincerity that goes with that, though. And so I don't want to criticize all of evangelicalism, but that's a fact. And then you add on top of that, you know, a very powerful organization with $250 million a year, you know, at its disposal, to tell you that not only, you know, can you have success and prosperity in your future life, but you can have it now too. And so that's the message that we promulgated. We, you know, it was, how does this help me? How does it help my family? How does it help my neighborhood? How does it help
and
my
therefore,
community?
Therefore, someone like Donald Trump becomes an admirable figure. The opulent lifestyle, the jet setting, that basically one reason why there's been this now natural alliance between Trump and the sort of Robertson's school of evangelical thinking, that here's a person who's living the life that we'd all like to live. So, you know, maybe he'll, if he's in power, the policies he puts forth may get us all there.
Right. And the thing is, Donald Trump, I'm an old guy. I've been following that guy since, for almost 40 years. So he's been in the news, but I don't think that it's necessarily Donald Trump. First of all, Donald Trump is a salesman, he's a textbook salesman. So the end of his job is the sale. He doesn't do anything beyond the sale, and he never has. He's a tremendous salesman. So closing the deal, is the end of it, which is why when he was elected, he felt, let's continue the election. Let's have these rallies. So he's really, everything he's doing is to sell himself for the next election. He's not an administrator, so there's that. But I think that the Christians voting for him were looking for, the Republican platform and what that represented more so than the individual Trump, because they've had to do incredible gymnastics to avoid the trappings of this guy's personality and his behavior in the past. For certain evangelicals to say that, well, he's accepted Jesus and we should, hold him to that. Well, I see no evidence that that's the case. And here's another, telling thing to me is that whenever I say something with my friends and followers about Mr. Trump, it is immediately interpreted by the Christians in the group. So, they feel they have to reinterpret what he is saying based upon their understanding.
Now, Terry, I want to talk to you about your time as executive producer at the 700 Club, because this is a very important aspect of what you discuss in your book. The fact that basically you were part of the project of creating a media outlet for religious views. Can you tell me what the mission of the 700 Club was back in its early days? What were some of the things that fed into the kind of making of this television program to sort of translate religious ideology to a mass audience? And of course, we know how effective that ultimately was.
Right. I think our mission was to spread the gospel through all the corners of the world, which is a very lofty thing. Strategically, it was to do it through television, and television that was that had behind it brilliant marketing minds, and so that to study the marketing of the 700 Club would be a very interesting project for some university or even somebody, students of marketing, because it's brilliant. There was one commercial that we made, a fellow named Warren Marcus, who was a brilliant filmmaker. It was called, Raindrop. And it was just imagery of first a single raindrop, then a couple drops, then, it goes on into a small stream and then into a mighty river and then into the ocean, where it is very, very powerful. And so that was... that was the kind of image that we were giving people, as if you joined us, we could create this, massive army that could change the world. And, so that for frankly, using television, it was really pretty easy to do because nobody had done it before. And we were proudly displaying our banner that we didn't care whether we were, you know, unbiased. We were very biased. And so we just pushed that forward. And it was actually pretty simple, day in and day out, you know, relentlessly pushing the same message.
Right.
And making it political too.
So I want to play an excerpt of a clip from a much more recent broadcast that Pat Robertson did. I'm assuming you were not involved in this. It was around when the Orlando shooting took place, where at the gay club, and where you basically had a massacre by a person that was ultimately the authorities decided was driven by the Islamic State. Here's what Pat Robertson had to say about that horrific shooting.
One more time, I want to mention the fact that this is a religious belief. It is deeply ingrained in the people. And for when our president refuses to acknowledge it, when the Secretary of State, now the Democratic nominee for president, refuses to acknowledge and says that this is a slur against a, quote, great religion. This is nonsense. This is what this great religion teaches. And it's right in the warp and woof of Islam. So whether you like it or not, that's the way it is. So the left is having a dilemma of major proportions. And I think for those of us who disagree with some of their policies, the best thing to do is to sit on the sidelines and let them kill themselves.
And that is Pat Robertson essentially saying, let us sit on the sidelines and let them kill themselves. I'm assuming he was implying that gays and Muslims or the left kill themselves. In your book, you also talked about how at one point Pat Robertson wanted to pray on the air that Supreme Court justices who voted against prayer in schools would basically, you know, that he would like to see them be replaced by any means necessary, including their deaths. When Pat Robertson talked about wishing for other people's deaths, how did you react? Did that start to basically, you know, have this inkling in your head that this is just not a very spiritual or Christian thing to wish for?
Right. I think that's, you know, that statement that you played is outrageous. And, you know, Pat has not aged well. And, you know, I think, you know, there, from what I understand, there are forces at work at CBN to try to ease him off the air because he's just, I mean, he makes crazy statements like that. And while that kind of stuff crept in once in a while, when I was there in the 80s, I'll give you one example. There was a school prayer Supreme Court ruling, and the show was aired live at 10 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time, and this ruling came down after the show had aired. But the program also replayed on cable at 10 o'clock at night. So Pat wanted us to redo the opening segment of that day's show for that night and talk about this Supreme Court ruling. Well, so we did. We assembled everybody and, you know, we redid the opening segment. And in that segment, he called everybody together to pray. And he actually prayed that God would kill the Supreme Court justices who had made this decision. And so we stopped the tape, and myself and the president of the CBN, we went up to Pat and said, you can't say that. You know, you just can't say that. So we had to start over, and we redid the segment where, you know, he would come just up to the edge of saying that during the prayer, but he didn't actually say it. So that's an illustration of that kind of really outrageous thinking.
Now, Terry, the Christian Broadcasting Network was attempting to be a media outlet. You even had a news department. But how did you navigate putting a religious program out while at least on the surface having to follow the rules of news reporting, such as things have to be facts in order for you to report them? You know, how did things like miracle working fit into that criteria?
Well, let me tell you, it was pretty easy at the time because we were just making stuff up as we went along. And
whoa, hang on. You know, say that again. You were just making stuff up as you went along?
No, I'm talking about we were making up processes and procedures and ways of thinking and ways of presenting the news. And we didn't make up necessarily stories. So that's not the case. But it was pretty easy to do because nobody else had ever done it before. And so when I say in the book that we wrote the playbook that Fox News uses today, I'm dead serious. We did create the first, you know, point of view journalism program from the right wing perspective. And the problem with that is the right wing is a political expression. And so what we created was political news, and that, you know, we inserted ourselves in the on the line of mainstream and pushed it to the left, which was necessary in order for us to secure a position on the right. That is a that is a false hegemony. And I think, you know, it's time that people started talking about that. And that means talking about the origins of that kind of press, including going all the way back to the National Review. I mean, the National Review didn't pretend it was a news group or organization. It was a magazine, you know, from a conservative perspective. But then along came Nixon and Agnew, and you know, we decided we could, along with Rush Limbaugh and a whole bunch of other people, decided we could create our own news. And that's a false narrative, in my judgment.
How did you get out of that whole thing? What was the journey that you took out of your role in the 700 Club to where you are today, writing a book about what you see as, you know, a sort of a dangerous trend?
Well, I wrote a chapter about that and took it out of the book because I didn't want that to become the focus of what I wrote. So, you know, because my journey, you know, has been long and brutal to get to the point where I can live life on life's terms and not my own. And so I call myself Christian. But I'm not, I don't fit anybody's pigeonhole. And I think that's one of the things we've got to get out of is our notion of putting everybody in pigeonholes, that if you call yourself this, that must mean that. And it doesn't, it just doesn't. And, you know, human beings are all, you know, like snowflakes, but we're all different, but we're still snowflakes. You know, you can't forget that. You know, I've had numerous crossover experiences in my life. My daughter, my oldest daughter, my son-in-law, and four of my grandchildren are Muslim. They live in Amman, Jordan. That automatically makes my view on the world different. And it's you know, I would much rather live, you know, enlightened than I would in the darkness of one potato, two potato, three potato, four. And so, you know, my Christianity is not what you would describe or ascribe to any particular denomination. In fact, you know, more than you realize, there are a whole lot of people like me. And, you know, and I think that there is actually a spiritual revival of some sorts taking place in the world today as people are looking for something that speaks to them more holistically than the narrowness of the Christian or evangelical Christian world. Besides, you've got the whole issue of what is a Christian anyway? You know, I mean, there are so many different stripes, you know, and they all think they're right. So, you know, I just think the world, especially Western civilization, is ready for something new. And I see a lot of people working to that end, and I see a lot of hope on the horizon that, you know, one man's dystopia is another man's utopia. And so I don't take for granted anything that's happening today. And I think that it would be wise for others to feel the same way.
Well, finally, Terry, what advice can you give journalists like myself and also people who consume media, which is most everybody these days, about how to view the news? Because there is such a skepticism about what's being put out there. And because of social media today, it's just becoming increasingly easy to generate outrage, to share it, unquestioningly, to pass on clickbait without being critical of it. And that seems to have kind of amplified the style of media that originated with CBN and then went on to Fox News. Now we're sort of seeing just multiplicities of right-wing news websites that are sort of the online versions of CBN and Fox News that proliferate outrage, that proliferate anger that has a basis in nothing, anger towards poor people, towards Muslims, towards people of color. How do we view that?
Well, I think it's, you know, that's a great question. Of course, it is the question.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are trying. One thing we have to realize is that this revolution that's taking place with regards to connectivity and the World Wide Web, it has nothing to do with mass media. And as long as people try to use mass media to reach all of those people, it's just not going to work. Because, you know, people are so hip to mass media these days, and they, you know, if once your brain is in the position of I can't trust this, that, or the other thing, then it's over. And so I think mass media has had its day, and that, you know, that the skills that are required today are the most important one is listening. And, you know, I think that I wrote a piece many years ago about how people, the longer people use the web, the more sophisticated their use of the web becomes. And so I think it may take a generation, but I do think that that people will figure things out. And we have to, you know, those people such as you and me who are interested in this must continue to provide tools for people to use to help them figure it out. And that's not in any way, shape, or form a lecture. I think the demonstration of crossover experiences that people have with other, you know, parts of the culture, that's super important too. I think because people will listen to a story about somebody where they won't listen to an expert. You know, expertise is on the wane, at least modernistic expertise. And, you know, that's that, you know, it's Jay Rosen calls it the great horizontal. And that's the age that we've entered. And in that sense, I view chaos as very hopeful, because people will figure it out. You know, the idea
I have to take a little issue with that, though. I mean, even if you feel like we have to go through chaos in people's lives, for example, families that are separated through deportation or not allowed into the country, that is chaos that comes at a deep price, a price that for some individuals is far too high to bear.
Well, I think that people sharing, you know, just us talking here today, for example, if I were to have this discussion with a friend on Facebook, that would be very useful. And I have had such discussions with people, and a lot of my former CBN colleagues are no longer march in lockstep with anybody. And, you know, that's, you know, extremely interesting to me. And I think word of that is going to get out because, as I said again, there is this great spiritual thirst out there today, and it's going to be satisfied somehow, some way. And I, you know, that's why I keep talking to Christian groups about the horizontal church and, you know, the church of the Holy Spirit, not that of God the Father or Jesus. So because we are all connected. I mean, that's just the truth. And now that the web gives us technology that allows us to bring that connection to our consciousness, you know, it's just going to keep going, you know, unless, you know, God forbid, you know, the web is somehow destroyed. I mean, that's why I say that net neutrality is the most important political issue before us today. And because we need the freedom to connect and the freedom to share and the freedom to exchange, because we need to get out of this, you know, one to many, thus saith the Lord, or thus saith the preacher, or, you know, thus saith the president, kind of mentality. That's the, an old model.
Well, Terry, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and we will share information about your book on our website. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
My guest is Terry Heaton, former executive producer of the 700 Club on the Christian Broadcasting Network. He had worked alongside Pat Robertson, and we've been talking about his new book, The Gospel of Self, How Jesus Joined the GOP. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.